From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Mina Kim. Coming up on Forum, from op-eds in the New York Times to shampoo commercials, women are being called out for over-apologizing, like saying, "I'm sorry," while asking a waiter again for the water he forgot to bring, or apologizing when someone has bumped into them. It's often called tentative or indirect speech, and in this hour Forum, we'll dig into why we, men too, use tentative speech and whether we need to apologize for it. That's next on Forum. Join us after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Mina Kim. A recent New York Times opinion piece claims women apologize all the time, even when something is not their fault. Reasonable requests get injected with a "sorry" or "I hate to ask." Emails and text messages, too. Sound familiar? Men do it, too. So why do we do this? And are there social consequences? We've put together a panel of experts and linguists for the hour to explore the nuances of so-called tentative speech, and we want to hear from you. Have you become conscious of this or tried to change the way you speak? Let me tell you who's joining us. We have Robin Lakoff, Professor Emerita in the Linguistics Department at UC Berkeley. She teaches and writes on language and gender and also looks at the language of politics. She's the author of Language and Woman's Place. Welcome, Robin Lakoff.
Oh, good morning, Mina.
And I'd also like to welcome Deborah Tannen. She's also a professor of linguistics at Georgetown University. She's the author of many books, including the bestsellers You Just Don't Understand, Women and Men in Conversation, and Talking from 9 to 5. Good morning, Deborah Tannen.
Good morning.
And Kristen Conger, welcome to the show. She's co-creator and host of the podcast and YouTube brand Stuff Mom Never Told You. She's also a senior writer and host at HowStuffWorks.com. Hi, Kristen Conger.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So before we start the conversation, I just want to play some tape that our intrepid producers got from students at UC Berkeley.
Almost all of the women that I know, they'll start talking by saying, "Oh, this may sound dumb," or "I'm sorry." And it's crazy to hear that all the time because it's like you're judging what you're saying before even giving someone else the chance to.
It's something that I consciously try to work against, as if it's an instinct within myself that I'm trying to overcome.
With men, often I see their vocabulary is very uncompromising and very, very straightforward. You know, men don't beat around the bush, but women will often pad what they're saying to make it less harsh.
And those were students from UC Berkeley. Kristen Conger, does what they're saying, does it resonate with you?
It absolutely resonates with me, Mina. It's something that I have become more cognizant myself in recent years in terms of being a chronic apologizer. It was something that I think I partially picked up from my mom, actually, just like a feminine socialization trait. And the more I paid attention to it, the more I realized, just like a lot of these young women were noticing, that I sprinkled apologies everywhere I went.
I read that you once apologized to your boyfriend for a burned dinner that he cooked.
Yes. Apologizing to him for our dinner not being good. That's when I knew that I had an apology problem.
Robin Lakoff, do you think women are over-apologizing? And if so, why?
To say about that, first there's over. And what that means when you say women over-apologize, women apologize too much, we're assuming a standard of perfection, and women fall away from that standard. And the standard, of course, is the male way. Now, it may be, we really don't know. Studies have not been done with any reliability, but it may be that women do these things more than men do, or in more context, under more circumstances than men do. But that isn't to say that women overdo these things. It's just that women and men do them under different conditions. So it would be better if we could kind of assume neutrality that way.
And Deborah Tannen, you have written a lot about how these apologies have different meanings. Can you talk a little bit about what those different meanings tend to be?
Yeah, absolutely. But I do want to start by saying how thrilled I am to be on this show with Robin Lakoff. She was, first of all, my professor at Berkeley.
Oh, wow.
And it's because of her that I even became a linguist. So I wanted to start with that. So I agree with everything Robin said. I would point out that people can have pointed out that women will even apologize to the table that they knocked into, or, you know, as we just heard, apologizing to your husband when he cooked the dinner. But I think what that shows is that these apologies are automatic, and they're really not meant literally. And in fact, very often when women say, "I'm sorry," it isn't an apology. It is, "I'm sorry that happened." It can be a way of taking the other person's experience into account. There are so many different ways that apologies can work. Sometimes it is an apology, but you know you didn't do anything wrong. You know the other one did, but it's a two-part ritual. So I know if I say, "I'm sorry for X," and you're going to say, "I'm sorry for Y," my saying, "I'm sorry for X," is a way of getting you to apologize. And often it does work that way. If it doesn't, then you end up thinking, "What's wrong with me? Why did I apologize? It wasn't my fault." It's kind of like being on a seesaw. You trust the other person to stay on their side, and if they get off, you go plopping to the ground. I would make one last comment based on the research I did in the workplace for the book Talking from 9 to 5. I actually encountered women who told me that they had to start saying, "I am sorry," more. And this, I think, is related to what Robin was pointing out. People expect a certain way of talking of women. They expect a certain way of talking from men. And if women don't talk the way you expect women to talk, you're going to end up getting a negative response. And so that's the spirit in which women have told me they sometimes got a better response if they said, "I'm sorry," more.
It works.
Robin Lakoff.
It's a double bind. That is, if women don't say, "I'm sorry," don't use tentative language, don't do upspeak, then they are damned because they're not feminine enough. They're not proper women. If they do it, then they're damned because they are too tentative, because they're not making their case well. Maybe even they're not too intelligent. So it's very, very hard to find okay middle ground.
And yes,
that's really the problem with, the thing is, we hyper-scrutinize women. The way we talk, the way we dress, the way we look, the way we smile. And this is just one instance that instead of saying, "Well, you know, one of the people on your tape used the word straightforward of men." And that, of course, is a very good word. We like straightforwardness. But we could have said brusque or uncaring or uninvolved, and would have sounded much worse. So we tend to not only hyper-scrutinize and hyper-interpret women, but we tend to give women's choices bad interpretations and men's choices good interpretations, like straightforward.
So we posit men as the ideal, the norm.
Exactly.
And, you know, it's interesting hearing you say, Deborah Tannen, about women who are expected to apologize more, and Robin Lakoff, how that expectation creates this double bind. There was this great article in the Washington Post which translated famous sentences into the phrases that a woman would have to use in a meeting in order to not be perceived as angry or threatening. And I just want to read a couple of them that she wrote. So, for example, "Give me liberty or give me death." A woman in a meeting would have to say, "Dave, if I could, I just really feel like if we had liberty, it would be terrific. And the alternate would be just awful, you know? That's just how it strikes me. I don't know."
Yes.
Kristen Conger, are you familiar with that
experience? Oh, absolutely. Doing the polite padding to present an idea and not come across as trying to wrest control of the meeting or whatever project you're working on.
I want to play a clip.
Could I just point out,
go ahead, Deborah Tannen.
Yeah, that is such a wonderful example of the double bind that Robin was just talking about. That was in response to a column that I think Jennifer Lawrence had written, or a statement she had made.
A blog post, I believe, or some kind of,
yes. Right, that she had simply been what Robin is saying you might call straightforward if the guy had done it at a meeting. She was accused of, someone said, "You know, back off there. We're on the same team." He thought that she was shouting. And so it's just a perfect example of the double bind. And then the comical ones that you're reading is the other side of it. If you talk in ways expected of women, you come off as weak.
And that's why I want to play this clip from Amy Schumer. It was on the Comedy Central show Inside Amy Schumer, and she satirizes how women, even extremely smart, accomplished women, apologize all the time.
Today's panelists are the top innovators in their respective fields. Dr. Amy Schumer is one of the lead scientists behind prenatal neuropeptides and their effects on memory and learning.
Yes, that's correct. Oh, sorry. Thank you. Am I supposed to say something? Oh. It's an honor to be here.
Great. Professor Sacha Baron is a Nobel Prize winner in chemistry. Megan Jo Leap is Pulitzer Prize winning.
I'm sorry, it's Megan.
And lastly, Christine Benning built and opened a school for child refugees in Rwanda.
Sorry, it's not child refugees, it's actually child soldiers. Sorry, I'm so annoying. Sorry, you go.
You know what? Sacha, let's start with you.
Yes, I'd love to. I invented a solar-paneled water filtration system that that's portable and lightweight.
do you need some water?
Yeah, sorry, thanks. That'd be great. But if you can't, no worries. Don't worry about it.
You know what? Why don't we just come back to you?
Sorry.
Amy, can you give us a little background on the research you're involved with?
Absolutely. Thanks so much. Sorry.
I'm sorry.
Please,
can I actually have a water? Sorry. I'm just allergic to caffeine. Please, go on. Just a water would be great. Thanks. Sorry. I feel like I'm being such a diva.
You know what? Just for time, I think we'll take an audience question.
Can I get some reactions to that clip? First, Kristen Conger.
I mean, I think it's reflective of everything that we've been talking about. In terms of what comes to mind when I think about it is this issue of likability for women in the workplace, where there is concern that it's towing the line, that double bind of wanting to progress and be very smart and ambitious, but at the same time, when we kind of transgress those gender norms, we risk losing that likability as well. And I'm sorry, it can be a way that we just try to immediately reel that back in.
You know, I come away from the Schumer clip basically with the message of see how ridiculous women sound when they're using this. But I also come away with the question of whether or not Robin Lakoff, she's contributing in some ways to almost policing the way women speak. As you mentioned, you know, this idea that we hyper scrutinize how women are speaking.
Well, you know, again, you can't talk about issues like this without invoking the two-edged sword or the double bind. That, yes, on the one hand, if we concentrate on how women speak and what's wrong with that, women will become more self-conscious. People will have another excuse to say, look how incompetent women are, let's not hire one. But on the other hand, humor is good. If you treat these things humorously, as in the example, I think it strengthens us. I think it lets us feel that we can get on top of this. That the way we look at how women talk isn't all that rational. So
right.
One thing.
And I don't know that moderator dude in the clip came off that great as well.
No, but of course that isn't what we notice.
Right. It brings me to this question of men do it too, right, Deborah Tannen? I mean, there are definitely men who use tentative speech, but the interpretations are different.
Yes, absolutely. In fact, that spoof, which is very funny because it shows how automatic these sorries are, is reminding me of one that I heard years ago about a British. I don't remember what group it was, but it was a bunch of British guys, all guys, and all saying sorry all the time. It is very common as an automatic utterance for men and women in the UK to be saying sorry, which just kind of highlights, again, if guys do it, it doesn't play into stereotypes and expectations about women, about them. Whereas for women, it plays into these stereotypes and expectations. Oh, there she is again, putting herself down, lacking confidence. I guess a theme that runs through so much of this is ways of speaking that are focused out, taking into account the other person's experience, are often interpreted, in the case of women, as revealing something internal lack of confidence. She thinks everything's her fault. And we tend to do that more with women because, as Robin said, we're the ones whose styles are always being queried, investigated, and psychoanalyzed.
We're talking with Deborah Tannen, professor of linguistics at Georgetown University and the author of books including You Just Don't Understand, Women and Men in Conversation, and Talking from 9 to 5. Also with us is Robin Lakoff, professor emerita in the linguistics department at UC Berkeley, and Kristen Conger, co-creator and host of the podcast and YouTube brand Stuff Mom Never Told You. We're talking about tentative speech and its association, rightly or wrongly, with the phenomenon of, quote, over-apologizing. You know, what it also brings up, Deborah Tannen, is also how apologizing is culture dependent. What are the origins of this in the U.S.? Is it just sexism?
That's such a good point. A culture that is known to apologize a lot is Japanese. And we have many examples where in Japanese culture, if you don't apologize, it's noticed. I remember reading about an incident, a small fender bender in Japan, which apparently normally would not be that big a deal. But the expectation is each person will apologize, both the person who hit the car and the person whose car was hit. And the anecdote that I read, it was actually a little item in the newspaper. It was with an American, and the American didn't apologize, and the Japanese person was so offended that he actually made a case out of it. And we know why the American didn't apologize, because we are told by our insurance companies, don't apologize, that's admitting fault.
Mm.
So there are huge cultural differences here. You know that it's often remarked when there's a airline crash or some terrible incident like that, often the head of the corporation in Japan will personally apologize. And I have even read about incidents where he went to each family affected and personally apologized. So a lot of that shows how powerful apologies can be. I guess I've written a bit about how women and men often end up having arguments, not about the offense, but about the apology. There was an example that I gave in one of my books. A couple lived out in the country, and she had asked him to mail a letter. He said he would. She emphasized how important it was. And then the next day, they both got in the car, and there was her letter on the front seat. And they both spotted it at the same moment, and he said, oh, I forgot to mail your letter. And she waited because she was sure he would go on and say, I'm so sorry, and he didn't. They ended up having an argument not about the letter but about the apology. And in looking at many examples of this, I observed that the, you might say, meta message, in other words, what it means that I say this to you, seems to be different for many women and men. Nothing is all women and all men. But the pattern seems to be that for many women, if you say I'm sorry, it means you care that you let me down. And if you won't say I'm sorry, it's like you don't care. And for many men, it seems that, yeah, sure, I committed a misdemeanor, but you're trying to make me plead guilty to a felony. Why are you making such a big deal? And I actually traced this to, you know, various examples that supported the implication that for a lot of guys, it feels like if you demand an apology, you're trying to get the other person to humiliate himself, and you can use that against him in the future. And we absolutely see that happening in public and politics. In fact, we just saw it with Hillary Clinton and the emails.
Go ahead if you want to talk a little bit more about that. Or And Robin Lakoff, if you want to weigh in on that as well, because I know you look at the language of politics.
Let's see, Deborah, you want to go first?
I'll just say a couple words. So we have many instances where an opponent will demand that an opponent apologize. And we saw this in the beginning, and there is a lot of evidence that what Hillary Clinton did using a personal private email server was not that big a deal. There were not there's no evidence that there was any state secrets revealed, and many of her predecessors had done the same thing. But with the press supporting them, the Republicans were able to make this into such a big deal that she finally was forced to apologize. And that the apology in itself sends the meta message, I did something terrible, I did something wrong. Exactly the reason that I was saying often in private conversations, many people, I think men somewhat more often than women, resist apologizing because it's like you're putting me in a weakened position. And that's the reason that people often say, never apologize, never explain, as advice to people in public life.
Robin Legault, did you want to add something to that?
Well, you know, I think Hillary Clinton is extraordinarily interesting as a person to watch because she is the first woman to attempt to achieve, you know, the most highly symbolic office that we have to give. And therefore, people are, in some ways, you know, many people are a little edgy about that. So one way that I see the Republicans concentrating on these insignificant emails, well, one, of course, is that she is the likely Democratic candidate, and if they can destroy her now, so much the better. But what makes that charge of the terrible emails hang around and not go away isn't that anybody really cares about what might or might not conceivably be in those emails. But it's kind of a way of saying, I think in a covert sense, women have no business talking in public. If a woman wants to be out there in public and speaking, we are going to make something of it. If a woman wants to be Secretary of State, we are going to make something of it and find something wrong with it. So I think on the one hand, it's perfectly reasonable given the state of American politics that the Republicans are behaving this way about something that really doesn't matter at all. But it also is very telling that this thing won't go away, even though there is nothing to go away, because it means something else.
Well, we've got a lot of folks who would like to get into the conversation. Let me just take a quick call from Hillary in Petaluma. Hi, Hillary. Not Hillary Clinton. Hi, Hillary. Are you there?
I am. Can you hear me?
Now we can, yeah.
Okay, hi. So I'm just listening to the conversation, and I heard another one similar to it on public radio not too long ago, and I just think we just are constantly critiquing women's speaking patterns, and I just think who cares? Women say sorry all the time. In Japan, everyone says sorry all the time. It's cultural, and maybe it's part of women's culture. Women have a separate culture, separate from male culture, and a lot of people think it's polite to say sorry. I say sorry all the time, and I completely defend it as polite. I think maybe, you know, men should say sorry more. It shows concern. Like, what's the standard that women are being compared against?
That's all right. All right, Hillary, well, thanks for sharing that sentiment. Give us a call if you have something to say, too, at 866-733-6786. That's 866-733-6786. We'll take more calls after the break. I'm Mina Kim. Stay with us. Welcome back to Forum. I'm Mina Kim. From op-eds in the New York Times to shampoo commercials, women are being called out for over-apologizing. But is it really all that bad? And what is it all about? Dissecting that for us are Robin Lakoff, Professor Emerita in the Linguistics Department at UC Berkeley. She teaches and writes on language and gender and also looks at the language of politics. She's the author of Language and Women's Place. Deborah Tannen is also with us. She's also a professor of linguistics at Georgetown University, and she has written You Just Don't Understand, Women and Men in Conversation, and Talking from 9 to 5. And we're joined by Kristen Conger, co-creator and host of the podcast and YouTube brand Stuff Mom Never Told You. Let's hear what our listeners have to say. Let's go to Patrick in Santa Rosa. Hi, Patrick.
Hi there.
Hi, go ahead.
Yeah, I was just calling to comment. I certainly agree with those that are on the call. Discrimination against women goes to the point of ridiculous. But I also think that I personally work for my manager is a woman, and she's very assertive. She's very informed. She's very effective, but she's also businesslike. When someone crosses the line and is rude and unbusinesslike, and I think that if they do that, it doesn't matter what their gender is, and it can happen on both sides of the spectrum. I listened to a show on this radio station several months ago, and a woman called in who said she was a feminist, and she said she she consciously makes an effort not to just take on the traits of these men who, in reality, are can be very rude and unbusinesslike. And people do point to them and say, well, they're great. They're doing a wonderful job. But I think rude is rude, and you just call it out wherever you see it.
Well, Patrick, thanks. Thanks for sharing that sentiment. Let's go to Janine in Pacifica. Hi, Janine.
Oh, good morning. First off, I'm very excited to be talking directly to Deborah Cannon. You're my big hero from the 90s when I read your book. You just don't understand.
Thank you so much.
Oh, sure. I think you were ripped off on that men are from Mars, women are from Venus thing. But anyway, my thing is I'm transgender, and I was a very successful male in the business world, and then I've also been a very successful female in the business world. But I can tell you, in 1995, when the transition happened, I noticed a marked change in how people were not reacting to me and were not doing what I said and were not liking what I did. And I kept being told, you need to say please and thank you. You need to be nicer. Why aren't you nicer to people? And it was like, wait a minute. I'm doing the same thing I did before. Why are you giving me a hard time? And I had to learn how to soften the edges and round the edges of what I did out. But still, as the gentleman just said before me, I have to be very, very straightforward and very businesslike in what I do because I'm a fairly high-level professional. So there's that line that I had to learn how to draw once again in my life to still be effective in my career and yet be able to be effective at the same time but not make people angry. And it was a totally different world. It was shocking.
That double bind comes up again, huh, Robin Lakoff? Janine, thanks for the call.
Yeah, I'd like to comment. The experience of transgender people is unique and fascinating, and I love to read memoirs by transgender people because they have lived in both genders. And the observation that the caller just made is one that I read about and hear about over and over. If you talk the same way as a woman or as a man, you get very different responses. And this pretty much supports so much of what we've been saying in the meeting so far, in our show so far, that the expectation that you need to just kind of soften the edges is something that's applied to women and not men. I would also like to comment on the previous caller about rude is rude. This brings me to another whole area of my research. My first book and my dissertation were comparing New York to California conversational style. And I've since done work on many other regions within the United States and other countries. It's not at all clear that rude is rude. Mm. There are many ways of speaking that will be considered rude in one place and polite in another. And so we really need to be careful and maybe step back a minute when something comes across as rude and ask ourselves, are we responding this way because of the person it's coming from or maybe what their background is, but I think that also ties in with the experience of a woman who was a man and sees that she's getting a response she wouldn't have gotten had she talked in just the same way
right.
as a man.
Well, here's another experience. Sean writes, this segment is fascinating. Oh, thank you. Just as I have noted, this happens with women. I have seen it in myself, being African-American and a larger frame muscular guy. I often preemptively will apologize for things which are not really a trespass on my part. For example, in the gym or out dancing, when people bump into me or get close enough to brush against me, I instinctively elicit, excuse me, or sorry. Looking at it from a critical perspective, I believe for me it revolves on two platforms. First, the notion that Black Americans might be perceived as in a constant rage. Secondly, not being petite makes one hypersensitive in general society. And the two in combination are their own heady brew.
Yes, and what's interesting here,
Robin Lakoff,
is that it isn't what we're seeing is it isn't only about women and men. It's about any group that doesn't have power, that has been left out of having the right to use language as they determine. So it's women, it's African Americans. In some circumstances, it's Jews, it's people it's working class people, and we can go on. So really, criticisms of language, expressions like "you need to be more" or "you need to do less," that kind of thing, are really ways that people who are the ones traditionally who have the power use to say, both to the others who don't and to people who might be listening or reading, you don't talk properly. You are the ones who don't really have language. Therefore, you are not fully human, and therefore, whatever we do or say about you is justified. So these are really more dangerous ploys, these ways of criticizing outsider groups, than it might seem.
Well, let's go to more calls. Let's go to Charles in San Jose. Hi, Charles.
Very good morning to you, ladies. Thank you for taking my call. And your guest's last comment actually comes close to what I wanted to bring to the attention of your listening audience. And that is, well, I started out with your screener asking the question, what women specifically are you talking about? Because in my professional experience in technology here in the Valley, I've not experienced that with women of color. It is predominantly women of a particular generational set, and almost and overwhelmingly so, Caucasian women who I have seen exhibit that type of behavior. And I think that your guest was right when she said it's people with power who tend to put these obligations for apologizing, for speaking a certain way, onto other groups with, quote-unquote, lesser power. And so really what we're talking about is a problem with Caucasian men. And I just, with all due respect, I take exception to saying women have this issue when it is not really women, generally speaking. It is a certain set of women. And I would not want the women who are listening to this program, who are women of color, to think, oh, my gosh, is this really happening? And I, you know, so I have a your wording is a bit problematic for me.
Well, Charles, thanks for sharing that. And it's interesting, too, because I think Charles touches also on power differentials as well. Kristen Conger, I'm curious, you saying that this is something that you do have caught yourself doing, have you actively tried to stop doing it?
Absolutely. It's not stopping myself from apologizing completely, because I agree that rude is rude. And if, you know, there are times when you absolutely need to apologize. But what I've tried to do is pay attention to what I'm actually apologizing for. And what came to mind a couple callers ago is this idea of apologizing for really just taking up space. And the idea, too, of, you know, women in Silicon Valley perhaps being a little more apologetic, maybe tracing to them taking up space in a very male-dominated, at least historically, kind of environment. So it's that kind of apologizing where I'm really just apologizing for me possibly bothering someone or being out of place or just taking up space that I might not think is really mine to take up, is the sorry habit I'm trying to uproot.
You know, I wonder, Deborah Tannen, if there's almost like a line you can draw between what types of sorry should be stopped and what types of sorry should be allowed to go on. It's just such a complicated line, because on one hand, people feel like it reaffirms this notion of downplaying women's power, of taking up space, maybe even making an apology less meaningful. On the other hand, right, you know, women should not have to stop apologizing to suit the needs of people who criticize women for doing it, or other people for doing it, too.
Yeah, it's such a complicated issue, and I also, we probably should include many other ways of speaking. Everything we're saying about saying I'm sorry would also apply to being relatively indirect, saying perhaps at the workplace, could you do me a favor and blah blah blah, instead of please do this, and all the other downgraders that we've talked about. And I want to say, too, how glad I am that the last caller made the point he did, that not all women talk this way, and not all, by the way, not all middle-class Caucasian women talk this way. But what we can never get away from is people are seen as representing a particular group, and we are reacted to through that lens of how people in that group are expected to talk. And so I have found that in my own research, absolutely, that African-American women, for example, and getting back to my own original research, women from New York in particular, New York Jewish, but also New York Italian and other ethnic backgrounds as well, don't talk in the ways that women, middle-class white women, are expected to talk. And they often get a negative response. And I remember a black woman who was one of the people that whose talk in the workplace I was observing mentioned that she said, yeah, she didn't talk in any of the ways that many of her white female colleagues talked, and that they were the ones that often were giving her trouble, other women, because they felt that she was not friendly enough, all those negative responses people have when they don't, are not finding another woman or another man talking in a way you expect them to. So I think we need to keep both those two things in mind. One, not everybody talks the same way, but no matter how you talk, you're going to be subject to the expectations that someone seen as a member of a group that is female, Jewish, black, whatever the group is, that you're seen through that prism. We so wish it weren't the case, but it does seem to be.
Yep. We're talking with Deborah Tannen, professor of linguistics from Georgetown, Robin Lakoff, professor emerita in the linguistics department at UC Berkeley, and Kristen Conger from Stuff Mom Never Told You. We're talking about tentative speech and its association, rightly or wrongly, with the phenomenon of over-apologizing. Pam writes, I can't shake the thought that rather than women apologizing less, men need to apologize more. This is one more example of women being asked to change to be more like men rather than pushing men to make changes. Having everybody become pompous, overconfident, and blusterous does not seem to me like a good thing. Madeline writes, there's a plethora of educated women in particular who insist on ending statements as a question. It is begging for approbation, and I find it distasteful. We've also had something, another comment related to this. Chris writes, the real problem is upspeak. Please, someone ban upspeak. Do any of you want to comment on this sort of dislike, I guess, of upspeak?
Well,
I can comment on it.
Kristen Conger?
The same thing.
Sorry, Robin Lakoff, and then
yeah.
Kristen Conger.
This is women have been taught to despise the way they are. And notice that these comments come from women very often, that, I hate upspeak, I hate apologizing, I hate what women do. These are, I think a good way might be to try to, rather than say, women do this thing that men apparently don't do, therefore women are doing something wrong, and therefore I hate it, but rather asking the question, what is it that women want to achieve by doing these things, and what do men want to achieve by doing something else? Because I think it's useful to see all of these traits, the upspeak, the apologizing, or the saying, I'm sorry, I don't really want to think of those as apologies, the hesitations of various kinds, the use of particles like, and you know, and I mean, all of these are part of the same thing, as ways of telling the person you're talking to, I'm open to you. I'm interested in what you have to say. I don't want to ride roughshod over you.
Mm-hmm.
I want to give you space, which I think is something that women are more likely to do in conversation than men are. Men are more likely, again, this isn't 100%
right.
By any means, but more likely to simply say, I have something to say to you. I want you to understand this, and this is me, and this is what I know. So there's much less of a need to get something back from the other person. And I think that if we can understand sorry and rising intonation and all these other things as ways of including the other person and saying, I recognize that you might be feeling differently and I want to hear your contribution, we might feel very much more positive toward them.
Well, Kristen Conger, you wanted to add something to this quickly?
Yeah, I mean, I'm personally, as a millennial woman, weary of the upspeech criticism, because while I host a podcast, so I pay a lot of attention when I'm broadcasting to how my voice sounds, when I'm casually talking to people, sometimes I upspeak, and I don't think that that should automatically, detract from what I'm saying and the value of what I'm saying. And I think that there's just, it crosses a line. Same thing with vocal fry, where men have their vocal tics as well, but why is their credibility not being penalized for that too?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, those questions were raised by Terry Gross, who did a segment on vocal fry and upspeak that I think some of these listeners are probably familiar with. Another listener writes, I'm a young professional female. I do not use tentative speech. I wonder if this is because English is my second language. I've been told by my peers that I am unapologetic, tenacious, and even aggressive. It wasn't until recently that I realized it was because I do not use tentative speech. I'm starting to believe that I must change so I can advance in my career. Being perceived as aggressive may be hindering my opportunities. Any advice?
So here we are.
Deborah Tannen, yeah.
Face to face again with what Robin identified as the double bind. I think one more comment about upspeak is such a perfect example of how something focused out can be interpreted as something about your internal state. So it's often seen as ending like it sounds like a question means you're unsure of yourself, you're asking for reassurance, whereas it could be as simply encouraging the other person to say, give you a response, kind of, building on what Robin just said before. Yeah. So I think, what this listener is saying is exactly what we've been talking about, that if women talk in ways expected of women, they're ineffective. If they talk in ways expected of men, they're too aggressive. And she even used that word.
Yes.
And so I think each person simply has to decide for herself how she's comfortable, what she might want to do to change the response she's getting. Whereas on the larger picture, I hope we all can perhaps step back and say, let's give women a break and let's stop critiquing women's ways of speaking. And I think it would be a better world if men said, I'm sorry, a bit more.
Yeah, well, that gets me to my next question. I mean, rather than women having to work to get out of this double bind, what are some institutional changes that could help as opposed to putting all the responsibility on the tentative speaker? Robin Lakoff.
Well, I think the institution we're talking about is humanity. it's really something, the way we feel about women versus men goes back as far in history as we can trace, and probably much further back than that. So really, everybody has to kind of do a makeover of their notion of gender roles and gender stereotypes and expectations. We've made great strides in the last half century or so, but there's a lot more to be done. We have to learn a new way, not of talking. I think it's probably not a good idea to keep pestering women to talk differently.
Yeah.
I think we have to begin to learn to hear one another in a very different way and in a less gendered way. And that would be my prescription.
How have we made great strides? You said we've made great strides. So how and are those lessons applicable to this particular situation?
Well, first of all, when I got into this business about 12 millennia ago, but let's say, when the women's movement was just getting started, there were hardly any women who had a voice in public, who could speak publicly, who had a role in business or academia or law or any other serious institution that were around to be listened to. So in a way, this wasn't a problem because there wasn't anybody to make it a problem. So it's progress that we're worrying about this, and it's progress in a perverse way that we're criticizing women for behaving this way in public because, every time somebody says that, you should say thank you because that reminds me of how much better we're doing than we were half a century ago, and we're going to continue doing even more.
Well, there's the silver lining. It means that we are more out there and more vocal.
Yes.
Let me go to more calls. Let's go to Trish and Arinda. Hi, Trish.
Hi, great topic. I'm a media trainer, so I help clients get ready for press interviews. And one thing that I see as a gender habit in women is that they tend to preface a statement of fact with the words, I think. So a man will just say, our company is going to overtake company Y, a woman will say, I think our company will do this. And I'm just wondering if the experts can comment about that.
Who'd like to take that, Deborah Tannen?
Sure. It's one more in this whole array of features we've been talking about. It's a kind of downgrades what you're about to say. My point about it would be that it's automatic. They're not really saying, I don't really know, I think, but they're just throwing in words that they've learned over time or gotten in the habit over time of throwing in. I think it may actually be the case that an individual might try to say, I'm sorry, less, and their sentences with rising intonation less often, cut out the I thinks and the justs and the disclaimers starting what you're going to say. A person, an individual, might decide that they want to stop doing that because they're going to get a better response. But I do think, I guess we've all been saying this, the larger hope would be that we would stop being critical and stop judging people by these kinds of things. And I think we can meta-communicate. We can raise awareness, raise consciousness about this in our everyday lives.
Yeah.
So if you've said, I'm sorry, and somebody says, don't apologize, it's not your fault, you can say, I wasn't apologizing. I was saying, I'm sorry that happened.
Yeah. Well, we have a few minutes left. Let me try to get a few more calls in here. Anthony in El Cerrito. Hi, Anthony.
Hello.
Hi, go ahead.
Great topic today, and not to take too much away from you talking about women at large, I just wanted to share some similarities. I'm an obese male, and I find myself constantly apologizing, and I've noticed it's just for the physical presence I take up, and it'll be, I'll walk next to somebody, I'll be 3 feet away, but, oh, I'm sorry, excuse me, having never really entered anything close to their personal space, but just my size, my presence feels, makes me feel compelled to apologize. And I just wanted to ask what the societal pressures were to elicit that from me, and also what they shared with women as a whole, because I feel when you guys talk about tentative speak, I very much feel in that group, even though I'm a white male, I really should, you know, go skew towards the other way, but I find I don't at all.
And thanks, Anthony. Anyone can quickly give Anthony a sense of the social pressures that he's responding to?
Well, you know, I think his point is
Robin
very
Lakoff.
Well made, very much to the point that it's that because of his physical shape, he is understood by others as being the other, the outsider, not the norm. And no matter what kind of non-norm you are a member of, you will feel the need to behave this way. You've been trained to it. And other people will expect you to behave that way. So it's really all part of the same phenomenon.
And let's go to Lisa in San Jose. Thanks, Anthony, for that call. Lisa.
Hi. This is such a great conversation. I'm loving listening to it. I'm wondering if a lot of this is somewhat generational, though. I'm almost 56. I started working in the oil field as an engineer in 81 and then moved to investment banking. Two very male-dominated fields. And I was constantly told, you're too aggressive, you're threatening. At one point, I was even told, you're too tall, and there's nothing I can do about that. That wouldn't happen today, but as an older parent, I interact with a lot of younger women now in my kids' classes, and it seems like they have the ability to be so much more direct and straightforward in their speech. So to me, it seems like things have changed much toward the positive over time. Is that being noticed by anyone?
Well, glad to hear that. And it sort of speaks to your point, Robin Lakoff, that that things are getting better. And even this policing of women's speech, whether it be of speaker apologies, just means that we're being heard more.
Yeah, things are really getting better.
Kristen Conger. Oh, sorry.
Fast enough.
Kristen Conger.
Well, one quick observation with that is I absolutely agree that girls are being raised with more empowerment to, you know, embrace their own speech. They can be whatever they want to be. But I think things change once those girls, at least from my experience and a lot of women I know, it changes a lot once you get to college and then way more once you get into the workplace. When the autonomy that you might have had to just be a girl and speak the way you want to speak, up talk, vocal fry all day long, is greeted very differently in a professional setting.
Mm. Well, Lynn writes, the Schumer piece was excruciating. That was that Amy Schumer clip we played earlier. It was that kind of thing that spurred me to stop apologizing 30 plus years ago. And oh boy, have I paid the price. It really wears one down. Just one instance, my boyfriend of 20 years gets offended if I don't apologize for trivial errors. So I decided to count his apologies. The ratio was about 25 my apologies to one of his. It hurts. Well, there's a strategy. I want to thank our callers for a great hour. Thank you so much, Robin Lakoff. She's Professor Emerita of Linguistics at UC Berkeley. And also thank you to Deborah Tannen for joining us, Professor of Linguistics at Georgetown University, and Kristen Conger, co-creator and host of the podcast and YouTube brand Stuff Mom Never Told You. Thank you all for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And thank you to our listeners for sharing your stories and insights. Forum is produced by Irene Noguchi, Tina Lauerberg, and Judy Campbell. Our engineer is Danny Bringer. Our engagement editor is Amanda Stupai. And we get online support from David Marks. Our interns are Latoya Tools and Jeremy Siegel. And our senior editor is Dan Zoll. I'm Mina Kim. Thank you for listening. And happy again.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation.